Calcium, magnesium, as I mentioned before, both high and low levels of magnesium can cause depression. One of the best ways to check for magnesium levels is to do a red cell magnesium. That can be done on a blood test. Also, hair mineral analysis may be a good way of checking it. Some of the symptoms that are associated with low levels of either calcium or magnesium would include things like needing to wake up in the middle of the night, cramps in different places, severe muscle spasms that come and go. Fatigue is a common deficiency of magnesium. It's a common sign of magnesium deficiency. Also, people who have fibromyalgia, high blood pressure, or PMS, many times they complain of depression, and using the magnesium often not only relieves some of the muscle pains and the blood pressure problems, but it may also help with some of the mood disorder. And most people ask me, how much calcium, how much magnesium should I take? Well, most supplements are sold in the ratio of 2-to-1. For example, 1,000 milligrams of calcium and 500 milligrams of magnesium. But there are some companies that make a 1-to-1 ratio. And I don't know which is best. It depends on the individual case, I guess. I would try the 2-to-1 ratio first. And if that wasn't successful, maybe use a 1-to-1 ratio, because some people might need more of the magnesium than the calcium. Zinc and copper are also important to look at. One of the commonest causes of severe fatigue that's really underdiagnosed, in my opinion, is copper excess. Too much copper in the system can produce severe fatigue. It has some effects, adverse effects on the liver. It has adverse effects on certain hormones. And you can determine your copper levels probably best through hair mineral analysis. I found that to be the most useful. And if you have very high copper levels, you can easily control them by taking zinc, because zinc is a copper antagonist. So usually taking zinc and vitamin B6 will get rid of excessive copper from the system. A couple of other amino acids I'd like to talk about. One of them is L-tyrosine. How many here have heard of L-tyrosine? Probably most of you. Okay. Well, it's a precursor to the neurotransmitters norepinephrine and dopamine. And they're often deficient in people who have depression. And the usual supplementation that's effective is somewhere between 500 to 5,000 milligrams a day. And once again, it's hard to know whether a person is going to respond positively or negatively to this. You can obviously do amino acid analysis, or you can do a trial therapy and see what happens. In terms of adverse effects, I've never really seen any with tyrosine. The other amino acids that may be effective are both L-phenylalanine and D-L-phenylalanine. Now, phenylalanine is a precursor to tyrosine, so why not just take tyrosine? Well, that's because in addition to the effects that you get with tyrosine, D-L-phenylalanine, for example, gets converted to something called phenylethylamine, and that's been shown to be deficient by itself in many cases of manic depression, and you don't get that if you just supplement with tyrosine. Phenylethylamine may not mean anything to you, but it's part of the reason why people crave chocolates and marijuana, because both chocolates and marijuana seem to have high amounts of that, phenylethylamine. So if you take this D-L-phenylalanine, the chances are you'll feel the same kind of high that you would from chocolates or from marijuana. And many patients who can't seem to get rid of their addiction to chocolates, oftentimes you can easily do that by taking D-L-phenylalanine. Phenylethylamine is created by the body in greater amounts when the individual is, quote-unquote, in love. Conversely, a deficiency such as that suffered by many manic depressives may lead to an unhappy feeling similar to that which normal people feel when they are heartbroken. Phenylethylamine is supposedly present to a greater degree in the DL form of phenylalanine than the L form. However, the DL form may be more likely to increase blood pressure. The blood pressure elevation is probably one of the major reasons that you need to be monitored for the use of D-L-phenylalanine, although once again, it's quite rare that I see people with elevated blood pressures who come in feeling very, very depressed. Usually their blood pressures are in the low normal range unless they're severely obese or are on medications and have high blood pressure for that reason. So with all amino acids, the best thing to do if you're going to try GABA or tyrosine or DLPA or phenylalanine or any of these other ones, best thing to do is to start with low dosages, maybe 500 milligrams a day, and gradually work your way up. And where you see a good response is probably the dosage where you should stay. If that response is not happening as well as it did the previous time, then you can gradually increase the dose. And in most cases, there really aren't any significant side effects to write home about. Another treatment many of you may have heard about a lot in the news is SAMI. How many have heard of SAMI? Okay. Anyone see this in McLean's magazine? This was McLean's a few weeks ago, actually November 12, 2001, Overcoming Depression, talked about a woman who was using S-adenosylmethionine, or SAMI, as a treatment for depression. And it's been pretty effective in studies that have been done in Europe, especially. In Europe, doctors tend to use more of SAMI than almost any other type of medication. And its usual dosage is between 500 to 2,000 milligrams per day. One of the problems with that is that SAMI is very expensive. So I would have spent a lot more time talking about this, but in many cases, the cost of SAMI is somewhere between $10 to $20 a day, and most people don't want to spend that kind of money on just one supplement. Why can't we get SAMI anymore? Well, the real reason is that the drug companies are very interested in taking it over and basically issuing it in prescription form. If any of you remember back about 10 years ago, tryptophan was taken off the market, more than 10 years ago now, probably about 15 years ago. And the reason that they said it was taken off the market was because of some sort of problem with eosinophilia myalgia syndrome, or that it was toxic. And so it was taken off the market. The real reason was because what they wanted to do was basically put it under the pharmaceutical prescription umbrella. Tryptophan in the health food store used to cost probably about $20 for a bottle of 100, 500 milligram tablets. Now if you buy it, it costs you between $130 and $150. And that's because you need a prescription for it. But guess where all the profits are going now? They're not going to the health food store proprietor. They're going to the drug companies. So the same kind of thing is happening with SAMI. SAMI is extremely effective. And can you imagine if it was available in all the health food stores like it is in the United States, and people knew about it, they read McLean's magazine, and everybody wants to try it because it has no side effects. People would go off and buy this, and where do all the profits go? The profits would go to the health food stores or to the supermarket or whoever else was selling it, basically. So what the drug companies want more than anything else is to be able to get the profits from it. So they've basically taken it off the market. Now, that's the real reason. What they will tell you is that it hasn't been proven to be safe and effective, which is a lot of BS, because I could show you 60 studies on it which show that it is safe and effective. And in fact, it's probably 1,000 times safer than any prescription antidepressant out there, including Prozac and Paxil and, even green tea. So, it's really, when you see things that are banned out there, know this for a fact, as far as natural supplements are concerned, the real reasons are political and economic. They're not because these things are dangerous. St. John's wort will not kill you, for example. It's more likely that you're going to die of an aspirin overdose or an aspirin toxicity, even from prescribed doses of aspirin, than you will from St. John's wort or any of the things that I've mentioned here today. So basically, it's economics and it's politics. And that's all I'm going to say about it, because I'll get in trouble. I'm already in enough trouble as it is. Okay, speaking of tryptophan, there is a form that's available in the health food stores until, if you want to get tryptophan without a prescription, you can still get 5-HTP, that's 5-hydroxytryptophan. It's a metabolite of tryptophan that's made in the body that may work even better than L-tryptophan, and it's certainly well worth trying. It's called 5-HTP, 5-hydroxytryptophan. And the usual effective dosage, somewhere between 50 and 200 milligrams three times a day. The dosages are much lower than they would be for the amino acid tryptophan, which is usually between 500 to 5,000 milligrams a day. Now, 5-HTP has quite a few other benefits. And it is available in health food stores, so at least for now it is. Unfortunately, if it becomes as popular as SAMe, then the federal government will rush in there and take it off the shelves like they've done for a lot of other things that are very effective. But some of the things that 5-HTP can do, it helps suppress appetite. Serotonin is a major natural appetite suppressant. It causes a feeling of satiety and a loss of interest in eating. So administration of 5-HTP, presumably acting as a precursor to serotonin, has produced weight loss in controlled studies that were conducted in Italy in the early 1990s. Massive doses, up to nearly 500 milligrams, were given daily in these studies, and side effects such as nausea and vomiting were experienced. Similar results with fewer side effects can be obtained with much lower doses of 5-HTP, somewhere between 50 to 200 milligrams a day. So I don't advise people to take 500 milligrams a day of 5-HTP, or they'll be running to the washroom to vomit several times a day. So 50 to 200 will control your appetite, will produce satiety, and as far as other side effects, there really aren't any. 50 milligrams to be taken 20 minutes before meals will produce more pronounced appetite suppressant effects. So if you take it episodically throughout the day, very much like a homeopathic remedy, you take it many times. The more times you take it, the more effective. And you don't have to have massive doses. And the cost of it is significantly cheaper than L-tryptophan, which you get in a pharmacy. Now, 5-HTP can also help improve sleep. It should be taken before bedtime, 50 to 200 milligrams before bedtime. The reason why it works is because it increases melatonin concentration in the brain. Now, I know you cannot get melatonin in Canada for economic and political reasons, but you can still get 5-HTP, and if you take 5-HTP in the brain, it converts directly into melatonin. So don't tell anyone I told you that. It appears that if 5-HTP is taken during the day, the melatonin is stored in the pineal gland until nightfall, when the melatonin is released by action of the biological clock. Thus, 5-HTP does not normally cause drowsiness during the day. So when people take this for one thing, oftentimes they report back that a lot of other things are better, like their social interactions are better, and they seem to do better at work. They're more productive. They're seemingly happier, and they have better relationships with their spouses, etc. So all of these things may all be due to basically the same kind of thing, but working in different areas. The mode of action of many antidepressants is based on increasing serotonin levels in the brain. The best-known synthetic drug whose mode of action is based on serotonin increases Prozac. Others are Paxil, Zoloft, and Effexor. The advantage of 5-HTP is that it's naturally occurring, it's produced in the human body, and does not appear to cause impotence, as occurs frequently with synthetic serotonin elevators. It appears that in addition to an increase in serotonin, 5-HTP also causes an increase in endorphins, which are also mood enhancers. So if you take too much 5-HTP, there is the remote possibility that you could feel a little bit high like you would from something like running. One of the best treatments for depression that I've ever seen utilized and seems to work in nearly 100% of the cases in people that can do aerobic exercise is to do at least 30 minutes of aerobic exercise 5 to 7 times a week. And believe it or not, that seems to make a huge difference in your moods. And one of the reasons for that is that your exercise seems to stimulate the body to make more of these endorphins, which are opiate-like molecules. So in your brain, you are making, on a regular basis, opiates. These are basically things that relax the body and control pain and control mood. 5-HTP is derived from L-tryptophan, is converted in the body to serotonin, which itself is a precursor of melatonin. 5-HTP thus is a precursor source both of serotonin and melatonin. Therefore, administration can be expected to produce effects of both serotonin and melatonin. Now, melatonin is not only something that induces sleep, but it's also a very strong antioxidant. So that's on 5-HTP, which is available without a prescription and well worth getting. Yes?
Backtracking GABA, when you... I come from a smaller center. Where do you get GABA? I do not see it in my health food store. And pyridoxal 5, reported that.
Yes.
A more readily absorbable form. Are there suppliers in Toronto?
Do you have a computer?
Yes.
Use it. It's on the internet. You can order into Canada, regardless of what the government is telling you. You can order in for personal use any of these things from the States. They are available, freely available, from Life Extension Foundation, from hundreds of sources in the United States. You may have trouble finding it in the store in Toronto. There are probably some places that carry it, probably under the table. I think pyridoxal 5-phosphate should be available in Toronto. Probably 5-HTP is available in Toronto. By the way, this lecture is being taped, so if any of you buy this lecture, please do not send a copy to the Health Protection Branch, because next thing you know, you won't have any of these things. But that's basically a real problem here in Canada, is the availability of these natural products. Yes, sir?
My question is about 5-HTP. I've come across some literature that says that not all of it gets across the blood-brain barrier.
Yes.
Some of the serotonin gets converted in the peripheries that causes muscular contraction. There's a researcher in the States by the name of Larson who says that in Europe they use 5-HTP with a drug called carbidopa.
Yes.
Across the blood-brain barrier.
Yes.
I'm wondering what your position on that is. Is it...
Yes, that might explain why some people don't get a good response to it. However, I've discovered that if you get a purified form of it, then you don't have any of these other factors that inhibit the absorption into the brain. If you get a much more purified, sort of pharmaceutical-grade form of 5-HTP, generally you don't have that problem, and you get the good results. Now, you know, like a lot of these things are not used in isolation, I don't think. You know, they are used in conjunction with a healthy diet, with B-complex vitamins, etc. So I think it's more likely to work if you're also following a healthier diet and you're eliminating a lot of foods. I don't believe you really need a drug to transport the 5-HTP across the blood-brain barrier. That's a little bit overkill as far as I'm concerned, you know. In any event, I think it's fairly safe, and the people that are having side effects, sometimes it's because of the purity of the product. Okay, let me just go on for a little while. We'll have some questions. We'll have time for questions later on. Just a few other things I want to get into. Getting back to Sammy, I think one of these days in the future, I think it's probably going to be available on prescription, and that might be good for some people sitting in this audience who have a drug plan, a private drug plan, or have private insurance, because with private insurance, it doesn't matter whether your prescription costs $50 or costs $5,000. What do you care? Basically, that's the attitude that most people that have come to see me are complaining about Sammy, is the fact that they can't afford it. And certainly at dosages that are required to treat depression, it's pretty expensive. Sammy is something that's generating increased media attention. It's also not just because of depression, but it's been found that Sammy is effective for arthritis and some liver disorders. Now, one of the liver things that I seem to see a lot in my practice is Gilbert syndrome. This is where people have liver function tests that are all normal with the exception of bilirubin. And the bilirubin is slightly elevated. And these people oftentimes, they don't look jaundiced, but they can become jaundiced in certain cases. And in many cases, that's due to a problem with liver detoxification enzymes. And Sammy is something that helps. If you take Sammy, that's something that will help eliminate that liver problem. The way Sammy works is by transferring, it basically works doing a molecular process called methylation. Sammy basically transfers one molecule to another. It basically transports a package of four atoms to adjacent molecules. So by doing that, it can basically affect several physical processes, including the regulation of some hormones, and it can affect the neurotransmitters serotonin, melatonin, dopamine, and adrenaline. It's not quite the same as, it doesn't work on the same basis as some of the other ones. It may work by regulating many of those neurotransmitters, not just one. Now, St. John's wort is another mild antidepressant or natural antidepressant, which seems to work by interfering with, basically works like one of those MAO inhibitors. And some people think that it increases serotonin, but it's controversial at this point. So in any event, basically when you take SAMe, it sort of normalizes your hormones, and it works relatively quickly. Usually we'll feel the antidepressant effects of SAMe within a week. So it's not quite like the other antidepressants like Prozac or Paxil, which take up to 3 weeks for it to work. And unfortunately, SAMe doesn't work for everyone. It's somewhere in a range of 75 to 80%, but once again, $8 to $10 per pill is kind of expensive if you have to take 10 or more pills a day. It's also a good arthritis remedy, and it also has been used to treat hepatitis or cirrhosis or Gilbert syndrome because it seems to improve the function of the liver detoxification enzyme system. Many of you may have heard of James Coburn, who was using high doses of SAMe to treat his rheumatoid arthritis. SAMe is something that will work for rheumatoid arthritis, but it will also work for a long list of other types of arthritis and inflammatory conditions, and anything that has to do with liver detoxification problems. So people who have severe sensitivity to chemicals or to foods or food additives oftentimes are helped also by SAMe. A few other things before we leave it open to questions. Caffeine and sucrose. There was a study that was reported in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1992. 62 normal adults whose caffeine intake was low to moderate, the equivalent of 2.5 cups of coffee a day, were studied at baseline at the end of each of 2-day periods during which they consumed caffeine-free diets, and under double-blind conditions randomly received capsules containing placebo or caffeine in amounts equal to their daily caffeine consumption. More subjects had abnormally high Beck depression inventory scores during the placebo period than during either the baseline period or the caffeine period. So some depressed patients experienced a tremendous lift by eliminating either sugar or caffeine. But in many cases, you can get an amelioration of a lot of different depressive symptoms by eliminating those things for extended periods of time. Alcohol is another one that may have something to do with depression to a great degree. Low brain levels of serotonin can be genetic, and alcohol may transiently increase both brain serotonin turnover, only to produce further serotonin depletion as its effects wear off, setting up a vicious cycle of repeated attempts to self-medicate. So in alcoholism, use of some of these natural remedies might be quite effective, particularly 5-HTP, because sometimes the reason why people drink or some individuals drink is because of the low serotonin levels. And so it becomes a vicious circle. Now, if you can find some way of regularly normalizing your serotonin levels, then it's thought that perhaps you can maybe get off of some of the things that you might be more addicted to, like alcohol, caffeine, sugar, etc. Because both alcohol and sugar, as well as alcohol, sugar, and caffeine, are all basically going to do the same kind of things. They're going to deplete your serotonin levels. They're going to stimulate serotonin levels and then eventually deplete them. Okay, and so you feel like you need more and more of the same to get that hit. And that may have a lot to do with addictions to other things as well. Okay, folic acid we talked about. SAMe, there's hundreds of studies on SAMe. There's also some studies on niacin deficiency. Depression is one of the possible psychiatric manifestations of niacin deficiency. That's vitamin B3. Now, I don't recommend people take niacin because it produces a severe flushing reaction and it sometimes scares people to the point that they end up in the emergency room turned red like a tomato and in a panic state. So what I recommend that you do to get the niacin is to use niacinamide, which is another form of vitamin B3, and niacinamide does not produce that flushing reaction. Now, there are some individuals who will even react to niacinamide. That's very rare, but it can happen. So there is a flush-free form of niacin that you can get that's complex with inositol. And when you get that one, then it doesn't produce that kind of reaction. And The way niacinamide works to calm the brain is basically it goes in the part of the brain that's called the Valium receptors. Valium or any of these benzodiazepine prescription drugs will basically attach in a certain part of the brain and produce their effects that way. Niacinamide may do pretty much the same kind of thing. So it may affect not only anxiety but also depression. And the mechanism, the exact mechanism by which that occurs, I'm not too sure. I don't think anybody is, but it seems to work. So niacin or niacinamide, somewhere in the dosage of 500 to 2,000 milligrams a day, people with blood sugar control problems who get into these panic attacks and who get very, very nervous or have trouble sleeping, they can take niacinamide, and in many cases, it calms their nerves down, regulates their blood sugar. Niacinamide is involved in how insulin works, and because of that, it probably seems to normalize blood sugar levels that are very fluctuating or very low. Thiamine or vitamin B1 we talked about, B6 we talked about. Vitamin C. Interestingly enough, vitamin C is very important for depression. It's one of the depression is one of the first clinical symptoms of experimental scurvy in humans. So people that have gum problems, bone problems, joint problems. It's surprising how many people I see in Toronto who are suffering from scurvy. These are the people that are smoking cigarettes and drinking a lot of coffee, eating a lot of refined carbohydrates, who are very much stressed, don't exercise, and there are still quite a few people like that out there. I see many politicians who are quite like that. But basically, vitamin C supplementation, it seems to resolve that scurvy, and it seems to improve their moods. Vitamin C is also required in the brain to convert tyrosine into adrenaline, and so people who feel tired and who take vitamin C and feel more energized, that's not placebo. That's basically something that is occurring because you've increased your adrenaline levels by taking vitamin C. So vitamin C may be one of the least recognized, vitamin C deficiency may be one of the least recognized causes of being depressed. Chronic depression, tiredness, irritability, and vague ill health can be a part of what's called a subscorbutic state, which means borderline low vitamin C levels. Hypercalcemia. If you go to a doctor and get a calcium blood level done, if you get an ionized calcium and it shows it to be very high and you're feeling depressed, the chances are that's because you may have a problem with the parathyroids. The parathyroids are small glands that are located near your thyroid, and they secrete, if there's a tumor in one of the parathyroids, they may secrete too much of the parathormone or parathyroid hormone, and that may cause your bones to demineralize and raise the blood levels of calcium. And one of the effects of that is being depressed. And there are some people who are depressed because they have an underdiagnosed or undiagnosed case of hyperparathyroidism. So those are some of the more rare reasons for it. One of the commonest causes that's also under-recognized is iron deficiency. And interestingly enough, depression is part of the deficiency syndrome. Now, you can be iron deficient and have a normal hemoglobin. So your hemoglobin could be between, depending on the lab that you go to, between 120 and 160, and still be iron deficient. Now, the way you determine that is by determining your serum ferritin level. Ferritin is the storage form of iron, and in people that are iron deficient, their ferritin level should be well below 40. The usual range of normal is thought to be between 41 and 300, and being lower than that, you can become tired and depressed. And it's oftentimes not recognized as a cause of depression. There was one study done in the Journal of Human Nutrition and Diet where they found that serum ferritin was severely deficient in a large percentage of patients in this one sample. 65% of the sample that they used, they were women, between the ages of 16 to 17. And then basically they found that they had almost 65% of them had low ferritin levels, and repleting the ferritin improved the depression symptoms. So that's something certainly to look at. If you have a doctor and you ask him to do a ferritin level, I'm sure he won't mind too much. Other minerals I mentioned before, potassium deficiency, magnesium deficiency, excessive amounts of vanadium, excessive amounts of mercury, lead, cadmium, aluminum, and many others. Deficiencies in essential fatty acids, especially omega-3 essential fatty acids, the kind of fatty acids that you get from fish and seafood, also from flaxseed oil. Those lacking in those can sometimes produce depression as well. Okay, so that's basically all I'd like to talk about before you all fall asleep. If you would like to ask some questions, we've got about 10 minutes, so yes. No, the body does not manufacture Prozac. No. No, I mentioned that tongue-in-cheek. And the reason why I did that was because, you know, a lot of my patients go see other doctors and, you know, I put them onto vitamin B12 or something. And so the doctor says, well, did Dr. Rona do a B12 level on you? And the patient says, no, he didn't. There, you see, he's a quack. No. So what I do in turn with doctors is that patient comes in on Prozac, and so I say to the patient, did the doctor do a Prozac level on you? And you know what? I haven't found a single doctor that does Prozac levels. Not one. They're all quacks.
A big difference in the way my body responds to organic coffee versus
yes.
the regular coffee.
Yes.
Don't get that real jazzed up at all.
Okay, well, that may be because there are certain additives in real coffee as opposed to organic coffee that, you know, are not there. The differences, obviously.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
You mentioned that certain foods give a delayed type hypersensitivity reaction, which leads to depression or hyperactivity. Can you just comment or walk me through the immunology around how that actually happens?
How does a food cause a delayed hypersensitivity reaction? Subsequently affects mood. Well, what happens when you eat a food that you're allergic to? It sort of sends the body into a kind of a stressful state, and that releases adrenaline usually. And so people who are allergic to milk oftentimes will crave milk. People allergic to anything will crave that food. And the reason why is because the last time they ate it, they got kind of an adrenaline rush from the food. Unfortunately, what happens then is because of the effects of adrenaline, it then tends to increase your blood sugar levels, which makes them fall down very low. And when you get low blood sugar levels, that's when you start to feel tired, run down, depressed, etc. So you basically have a whole bunch of biochemical reactions that go round and round every time you eat the food you're sensitive to. Yes?
What is normal for the iron levels?
What is normal for iron levels? Serum ferritin levels. The normal range for most labs is between 40 and 300. And anything under 40 is considered deficient. Now, if you talk to some nutritional doctors, they'll say anything under 100 is deficient, and you should probably take an iron supplement.
Caffeine craving.
How do I suggest to eliminate caffeine craving? One of the best things to do is to drink green tea. Green tea contains caffeine. And you're not going to go through the same kind of withdrawal thing as if you use green tea. If you start drinking that or taking capsules of green tea, you can get capsules now. You can get capsules of anything. Yes?
Should one be concerned
about caffeine addiction taking green tea? No, because, as I mentioned before, there's an amino acid in green tea called L-theanine, which basically blocks the negative effects of caffeine. Yes? Yes, a question was about royal jelly, whether it's a good thing to use to supplement some of the Bs. Yes, particularly vitamin B5, pantothenic acid, which is very important for the adrenal gland function and it improves energy and many other things, including moods. Yes?
When you're weaning somebody off of...
The question was about whether you wean people off of these, or you take them off and have the drug wash out of their system first before trying them on natural things, or try them on it simultaneously. There's two schools of thought on this. Michael Murray, who's written several books on this, he recommends basically keeping people on the SSRIs, starting them on something like St. John's Wort or SAMI or whatever, and then gradually cutting down the dosage of the prescription drug. And I think that's probably one of the safer ways of doing it, yeah. I would think the latter is better. But there are other people who have taken the other approach and it seems to work for them. So it all depends on the individual.
Okay, thank you. Okay. If an individual is on something like a low-dose Celexa, what's the safest or most effective supplement? I got a lengthy lecture from my physician on both antagonistic
yes.
and synergistic effects.
Yes. Well, if you happen to have a physician, probably the best way of doing it to keep the physician happy as well as yourself is to stay on the medication and then over a three-week period, reduce the dose by half, and then another three-week period, reduce it by another half, et cetera. So do it slowly. But it all depends on whether or not you get a good antidepressant effect from whatever you're using, whether it be tyrosine or anything else.
If you want to continue on the low-dose
yes.
supplement, which are the safest or most effective complements to
right.
something like Celexa?
Yes. I wouldn't recommend, people who are not under some kind of medical supervision, I don't recommend that you just suddenly stop Celexa or Zoloft or something like that, because you end up with a rebound depression leading you to suicide. So be careful if you're on those medications. You have to be careful if you're on those medications anyway. Yes?
Not all silver products are created equal. In your latest article in Life magazine, you're talking about mild silver protein products.
Mild silver protein, yes.
Can you recommend a pharmaceutical grade or really high quality product that you either get a bottle or order over the internet? Just looking for really high quality mild silver protein product.
Well, mild silver protein, the best one is Collag 40, which we get from the States. COLL/AG40. Those products were formulated by a Dr. Farber, who's written several books on colloidal silver and other natural antibiotics.
You said that that was definitely safer than colloidal silver.
By far, you could take it for years, no problems. Doesn't produce ageria, which is what you're worried about, the discoloration of the skin from taking colloidal silver. Yes?
Yes. When you're treating schizophrenia, can you do it this way with vitamins, minerals, and additives and removing some of the foods? Or does this have any effect? And is it a neurological disorder?
The question was about schizophrenia. If you want to read more about that, look at any of the books written by Dr. Abram Hoffer. He spent his entire life treating schizophrenia using niacin and mega dosages of vitamins and he also does recommend doing things like food allergy elimination and the use of amino acids. Dr. Carl Pfeiffer, for many years, while he was alive, did a lot of research, and he actually was treating a lot of patients who suffer from schizophrenia and getting some really good results. Now, there's a lot of controversy and debate about this. I do believe that schizophrenia is, in part, a biological illness and probably will respond to some of the things that we were talking about today, but what percentage is debatable? If you talk to Dr. Hoffer, he believes that nearly 100% will respond. If you talk to me and what I've seen in my practice, I would say it's probably closer to 5%, but, I'm not as good as Dr. Hoffer.
What causes it?
What causes schizophrenia is really unknown. There are many theories. Nobody really knows for sure. There are some biological or biochemical imbalances that are there. If you do different types of scans, PET scans or other types of scans, you can see that schizophrenics have a different type of brain anatomically than people who don't have schizophrenia. So there's obviously something physical, but nobody has really discovered exactly what that is and why. And in fact, there's some people who don't even agree on the definition of what schizophrenia is. And there's so many different types of schizophrenia that it's when you say schizophrenia, what are you really talking about? So it's at this point I would say it's largely unknown, and many of the therapies for it that are natural. I think if you want to read more about this, read any of Dr. Abram Hoffer's books. Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit more about St. John's
Wort? St. John's Wort.
Yeah.
Well, St. John's Wort is. A very safe and effective antidepressant for mild to moderate depression. There's at least 24 medical studies that have been done that show it seems to work quite well. The usual dosage of St. John's Wort is 300 milligrams of the hypericin extract, which is thought to be the active ingredient of St. John's Wort. 300 milligrams one to two capsules three times a day. And it's usually quite safe and effective, but the one thing you've got to remember about St. John's wort is that it can interact with many different medications. In particular, it can interact with any of the antidepressants. But lately, there have been some studies that show that it can interact with many different drugs, and so you have to be careful if you're using other medications. If you're not using any medications, the chances of side effects are extremely slim. If you are sun sensitive and you go out into the sun having had no sun exposure for an entire winter, you can get one of these hypersensitivity reactions on your skin and get a severe rash that's temporary or in some cases may last for several weeks. So that's on the downside. But on the positive side, it may help with mild to moderate depression. But for severe depression or suicidal depression, I wouldn't use it. Yes, lady in red there. Manic depression, is it curable? Well, the answer to that is no. It's a lifelong illness. It's something that you can only control, and I believe that some people can do extremely well with medication, and if they're doing really well with the medication, stay with it. If they're not, if they're having side effects, then look into some alternatives. I believe that there's a large percentage of manic depressive illness that can be controlled entirely by natural means, but nobody's really done any long-term studies on this, and much of the information that I've given you today is relatively new, and for the most part, what we would put in the unproven classification. However, I think it's worthwhile trying. If you are working with a physician, you might be able to try using a little bit of the medication, a little bit of the natural stuff, or a large amount of the natural stuff and maybe a little bit of the medication. So everyone's a little bit unique, and at this point, you're really looking at a lifelong treatment. Yes?
Have you heard that high histamine levels can cause sleep disturbances?
High histamine levels can cause sleep disturbances? I haven't heard that. I don't do much work with histamines or antihistamines except in the area of allergy. And as I mentioned earlier, that food allergies may well be related to mental problems. Yes, lady in green. What can I tell you about kava kava? It's a very good natural tranquilizer. It's relatively safe and effective. Usual dose somewhere between 200 to 400 milligrams several times a day and before bedtime. There really aren't any significant side effects. When you're buying kava, look for kavalactones. That's the active ingredient. If you are on benzodiazepines, things like Ativan, lorazepam, any of those drugs like that, then be very careful because it can be additive with those. Okay? I'm sorry, but we're going to have to leave. Thank you for being such a good audience, and hope to see you next year. Thank you.